Okay, this is our, again, a pre-Haggadah Shiur. As per your request, you did have a couple votes for Shechianu, so I think what we'll do is we'll say a Shechianu on the Shiur, but you'll also, I'm going to, along the way, at a particular point out a very small piece of the Shechianu Shiur, and what I may do is, even though we won't be in Pesachim anymore, I may give the Shechianu Shiur right after Pesach, anyways, because whatever, but in case anybody here is a Bechor or knows a Bechor or has a child as a Bechor and needs to attend a Siyum on Thursday, let me know and we might zoom you into our family Siyum or direct you elsewhere. Okay. I want to start with a story. And the story is a very well-known story. And an interesting piece about this story is that the Haggadah is such a famous work, it's such a well-known work, that, you know, you could mention the four sons to a fully secular audience, and they kind of know what you were talking about. You could certainly say the four questions, which we've already demonstrated aren't really four questions. You could say the four questions, and everybody would have an idea what you're talking about. All right, as opposed to most areas of rabbinic literature are not really that au courant. This is a story which is very popular because it's in the Haggadah. And there have been reams written about it and discussed and utilized and borrowed from this story. The story is right in front of us, Ma'aseh b'Reb Eliezer. And it shows up at the beginning, near the beginning of the Haggadah, right after we say the line, Avadim hayinu l'faro, we were slaves, and then if God had not taken us out, we'd still be there. And even if we're all wise and sagacious, etc., we still have an obligation to tell. And the more you tell, the better it is. All right, and this introduces a motif of the evening called Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, which, by the way, interestingly enough, does not show up in any Tanaitic literature. The notion of L'saper B'Yetziat Mitzrayim, to tell the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Except for this story, and let's take a look at the story. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, v'Rabbi Yoshua, v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, v'Rabbi Akiva, v'Rabbi Tarfon. Now, don't pay any attention to the colors yet. Story of these five rabbis, Shayu Misubin b'Bnei Brak. They're Misubin, which is the word we use to describe sitting at a Seder table. Why do we use that word to describe sitting at a Seder table? Because how do we sit at the Seder table?
Lean.
We recline, and that's what Misubin means. But Misubin actually comes from a different word. It doesn't really mean to recline. It means to be in a circle. Misaviv. And the reason is because at feasts, people would recline in couches in a circle facing each other. And by the way, a circle is a uga and also a chug. La chug is to get in a circle, which is why a chag, a festival offering, is called a chag. And from there, you get the word festival. All right. So, Musubin b'Bnei Brak. And this is such a famous story that there is even a major intersection on Route 1, as you enter Bnei Brak, called Somet Misubin. All right, check, go on to Israeli radio right around a little before the hour, around rush hour, anytime during rush hour, and they'll tell you that there is either smooth traffic or a traffic jam at Somet Misubin, along with all the other famous smatim. Okay. Vayum Misaprim B'Tziat Mitzrayim Kol Oto Alayla. They were telling the story of B'Tziat Mitzrayim all that night. That night is the Seder. Now, of course, right away, we should ask some questions here, which I have not seen asked, but I'm sure are asked in the voluminous literature of Haggadah commentary, which is, why were these five rabbis together in one of the rabbis' homes? Where are their families? It's Yontif. Where are their families? Right. So we can suggest whatever we want to suggest about that their families were there, but they're not mentioned, however you want to explain it. But the other thing that's a little strange is that they are all at Rabbi Akiva's house, because we don't know whose building it is, but it's in Rabbi Akiva's town. Rabbi Akiva is the rabbi of Bnei Brak. But if that's the case, then the way that the story is presented is a little strange. Ma'aseh Rabbi Eliezer of Yeshua, it should be Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah of Rabbi Tarfon, Shayu Misubin Eitzel Rabbi Akiva b'Bnei Brak. That's how it should have said, read. It should have read, the four rabbis were Misubin at the home of or with Rabbi Akiva in Bnei Brak. Instead, Rabbi Akiva is listed as one of the group, which is part of a much larger series of questions about this story that raises some problems about its exact historicity. All right. So now, what happened? The very famous answer. The students came in the morning. A very famous call. They came in the morning and they said to them, our teachers, it's time for the morning Shema. And the assumption, although it doesn't say it in the story, is that at that point they stopped. In other words, then we then assume that they said Shema and that they davened. It doesn't say that. It just says they were telling the story all night until, so the until seems to be an end point. The student said, it's time for morning Shema. Okay. The story itself is kind of strange. It's strange for a few reasons, besides the more detailed questions that I asked earlier about the location, etc., which is, first of all, why are Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Tarfon, who are all senior to Rabbi Akiva, both in position and in age, why are they at Rabbi Akiva's place in Bnei Brak? The bigger question is, if you look at this list and you know this generation, you'll notice that there is one glaring omission. I mean, this is a big meeting. This is like the top guys of that generation, except there's one name missing who is vital. And anybody know who that name is? Who's missing from this story? It's Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, who is the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, or the Rosh of the Sanhedrin, and he's not there at the time. Okay, so something to keep in mind. Okay, but now let's move on, because the next thing is, again, a very, very popular story because it's in the Haggadah. Almost anything in the Haggadah is popular. People say Dayenu, you know exactly what they mean. And they say it when you bring them too much dessert. Dayenu. They know it. All right, when you have a, when even as a colloquial thing, you'll say, you know, I have 8 guests coming tonight. So there's a Shmona Miyodea. Right? All the things of the Seder become popular, part of popular colloquy. So this story that we're about to read, and this little piece that we're about to read, is part of people's awareness, but they're not necessarily aware of where it comes from. And this one actually has a source. The story about the Chachamim Bnei Brak, I must point out, is not sourced anywhere else. Almost everything else we find in the Haggadah, from the core Haggadah, is found in other sources. Rabban Gamliel said you have to explain these 3 things. That's in the Mishnah. Avadim Ayinu is in the Torah. This next piece is the Mishnah in Brachot. But the story about the 5 rabbis in Bnei Brak doesn't show up anywhere else. Not in Bavli, not in Yerushalmi, not in the Mishnah, not in the Tosefta, not anywhere else. Right? So we got to see what's going on. In the meantime, it then is followed by a part of a Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. I'll explain why the word Lahem is there in very faint print. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is one of the rabbis at this meeting. People have pointed out, a teacher of mine pointed this out to me once, if you look at the order of the rabbis here, it is not in an order of importance. It is not in an order of seniority. Because then Rabbi Akiva would be at the end. But rather, if you look at the order, it is an order of the way they're seated. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is in the middle, because the claim is this is after he was already installed, after Rabbi Gamliel was deposed, the very famous story. That may be what's going on, but maybe not. Okay, so now, Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that presumably, at least at this dinner, is the chief, he's sitting in the middle, said, Hare ani kaven shivim shana. Very famous line. I feel what, how would you translate that? Hare ani kaven shivim shana.
Like 70. I'm like 70.
Like 70. And there's a famous Agadah in the Bavli. It's actually in Yerushalmi also, but not connected to this. Famous Agadah in the Bavli that he was actually a young man, and then overnight his hair turned white and he felt like a man of 70. The problem is this Mishnah itself deflates that. I'll show you why. Hare ani kaven shivim shana, which we're going to take a literal translation now and say, I'm about 70. I've lived my life, and I'm towards the end of my life. I'm about 70 years old. V'lo zachiti shteamar, which, by the way, today is 100. In those days, 70 was. V'lo zachiti shteamar yitziat mitzrayim b'aliyot. I was not merit. I was not successful in getting my colleagues to agree to legislate that the Exodus should be mentioned every night. Now, the very fact that he says lo zachiti makes it sound as if I've been working on this for quite a while and I couldn't get it passed until a certain thing happened. That's not somebody who's 18 who just became head of the Sanhedrin. It sounds like he's much, you know, talking about a lifetime crusade. And his attempt was to try to get the Exodus mentioned every night. And by the way, is that something we do or not? Do we mention the Exodus every night?
Yeah, in Shema.
Right. And in Shema, how many paragraphs do we say in Shema?
Three.
How many paragraphs? Three. What's the third paragraph of Shema? The main thing of the third paragraph is?
Tzitzit.
At tzitzit, of course, doesn't apply at night, which is why the rabbi said we don't say that parsha at night. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, I want you to say that parsha at night because I want you to mention the last line, which Avram is, Yitziat Mitzrayim. Right? He mentioned that. He wants you to say that at night, so therefore, he legislated. Because he legislated it, therefore, it's part of our davening. He won. How did he win? Now, important to note that this is not the entire Mishnah. The Mishnah starts with one line before this, which is Mazkirin Yitziat Mitzrayim Balelot. You mention Yitziat Mitzrayim at the night, that's the law, and then we get the background story. Why is that important? Because that I'm pointing that out because I want you to see that what you have here is a clip from Mishnah and not the whole Mishnah. All right? So when you clip, see, when, like, often when I bring you source sheets, I'll quote a whole source. And I'll say, you know, I'll highlight the part that we care about, but I don't want you to see it out of context. I want you to see the whole context. Okay. But if you clip a source, what part are you clipping? If you clip, meaning you select only part of a source, half a pasuk, half a Mishnah. So what does that say about the part that you're cutting, that you're including?
That's the important part.
That's the important part. It's all significant. So I'm pointing out to you that this is not the entire Mishnah, but rather it's a clip from the Mishnah. It's most of the Mishnah, but not all of it, which means I now have to assume that everything included here is vital, which now raises the following question. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Ari ani kiven shivim shana, and by the way, why do I care? Ari ani kiven shivim shana, why do I care that he's an older man, has been working on this his whole life? I was not able to successfully convince my colleagues to agree with me and to pass legislation to mention Yitziat Mitzrayim every night. Until this Midrash of Ben Zoma came along. What was the Midrash of Ben Zoma? And he quoted a pasuk. The Torah says, don't eat chametz, eat matzah for 7 days. So matzah, which is poor man's bread, that you should remember the day you left Mitzrayim all the days of your life. Kol Yimei Chayacha. And then the drasha was, if it only said Yimei Chayacha, remember the days of leaving Mitzrayim without the word called, I'd say it means Hayamim, remember it every day. Kol Yimei Chayacha, the extra word kol, extends it to nighttime also. Halilot. Okay. And by the way, at this point, I can cut out this thing that's highlighted in green. Because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah tells a story, and the story was, I wanted to get my colleagues to agree. They didn't agree until I brought this Midrash. Here's the Midrash. And that would be enough. The problem is the Haggadah quotes the rest of the Mishnah. And the rest of the Mishnah is the opposite opinion, which, by the way, we've already rejected, right? What's that? Meaning we do mention it's Yitziat Mitzrayim at night. So what's the opposite opinion? The Chachamim Omrim, Yimei Chayecha Olam Hazeh, that the word kol is not there to extend it to night times, but rather to say, even when Mashiach comes, we'll still mention the Exodus. And this leads to a fascinating dispute between Ben Zoma and the Chachamim about what things will be like in Messianic times. Will we still mention Yitziat Mitzrayim or not? All right, and that spins off from there. Well, the question I want to ask is, why is this part, the highlighted in green part, why is that in the Haggadah? Who cares? And bigger question is, why is this whole Mishnah in the Haggadah? This Mishnah is not talking about Pesach night. This Mishnah is talking about every evening. Who cares? Now, I told you that I'd speak about this word Lahem. The word Lahem appears in many Haggadot. Probably not the conventional Haggadah you use. It does appear in the Rambam's Haggadah. It appears in several other Nuschaot of the Haggadah. You know, the Haggadot we have various Nuschaot. We saw that in Manishtana. We saw a different version, different order of the questions. So this word lahem does show up in several Haggadot. And what does the word lahem do to this Mishnah? Amar lahem, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. What does the word lahem mean here?
It puts him at the table with the other Rabbanim.
Exactly, Sherwin. It means that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who was at the table, this is part of the conversation, which, by the way, would then solve the problem. I understand why this is here, because it's part of their conversation. Somewhere in the middle of their discussing it, see, I've been trying all night, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah tells a story and says, my whole life I've been trying to successfully, etc., and I get that. The problem is that the word lahem does not show up in one single witness of the Mishnah. Meaning, if you check the printed Mishnah, if you check Tav Yad Kaufman, if you check Tav Yad Ferma, if you check any of the manuscripts of the Mishnah, the word lahem doesn't show up. And then if you check manuscripts of the Gemara, which quotes the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah is printed in the Gemara. It's not there either in any of them. Which means the word lahem is not really part of the original Mishnah. So why is it in some Haggadot? Because they're trying to solve our problem. The problem is, what is any of this doing here? So if you have the word lahem, it kind of makes sense. And so they say, well, let me see. There's a story about five chachamim and the one sitting in the middle of the table, at the head of the table, is Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And we have a statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah trying to convince his colleagues about Yitziat Mitzrayim. So it happened the same night. Okay, then I kind of understand why it's here, but not really. And I certainly don't understand why the line at the bottom is there. Okay. But I want to take you somewhere else. I want to take you, to the Tosefta. And we've seen the Tosefta many times in our course. Excuse me a second. And this Tosefta, which is from our Perak, Arei Pesachim, tells a story. The story is in Halacha Yod Bet. But I want to start with Halacha Yod Aleph and go all the way to Yod Gimel. You'll see there's a reason I'm doing this. In the Tosefta, which was certainly edited and finalized and rescinded well after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Important to note that. Ein maftirin achar Pesach apikoman, or apikoimen, and we know what apikoimen is. It's that custom of carousing after a meal, going outside, going to other groups, right? We saw that in Yerushalmi. And here they give a different example. It's like going to egozim tmarim uklayot, to eat nuts and to eat dates and to eat like other things. In other words, after you eat the Korban Pesach, you don't need anything else. After the Korban Pesach, you don't need anything else. And then chayav adam la'asok bilchota Pesach kol alayla. Now watch what it says here. A person is required to engage himself in the study of Hilchot HaPesach. What's Hilchot HaPesach?
Korban Pesach.
What?
Korban Pesach.
Korban Pesach, exactly. Not how to kasha dishes, and not how to burn your chametz, and not what's appropriate maror, although maybe, but the laws of the Korban Pesach. Maror may fit in.
it's also excluding the Agadata of Pesach.
Say it again?
It seems to be excluding the Agadah of Pesach.
Yes, exactly, Sherwin. Thank you. It seems to be excluding the telling the story. Instead of saying, involve yourself in learning the halachot of Korban Pesach. Afilu beino levein beno, even if it's just you and your son. Afilu beino levein atzmo, even if you're all alone. Afilu beino levein talmido, or let's say you have your student there. Right? In other words, it doesn't have to be a big group. You should study halachot Pesach, even if you're alone. And then we hear a story, just like we saw in the Haggadah. Remember in the Haggadah, it said, even if we're all wise and sages, we should tell the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And the more you tell, the better it is. And then we have a story of five Chachamim staying up all night telling the story. Well, here we have your Chayiv to study Hilchot Pesach all night. And now we have a story. Who's the story? Maaseh Berabban Gamliel Bezkenim. Who's the Kenim? Now it's a story about Rabbi Gamliel, the famous missing character in Bnei Brak, who is in Lod. By the way, it may interest you to know that the other four rabbis, besides Rabbi Akiva, the other four rabbis who are in that story are all from Lod, or they lived in Lod at some point in their life. Lod, where the airport is, Lod. Rabbi Akiva is the one who's the Bnei Braker, right? If you haven't seen Rabbi Akiva, Main Street in Bnei Brak. Okay. So now, Hayum Subin, same language, Bevet Baitos Ben Zunin Belod. So the house of some wealthy man in Lod. Vayu asukin behilchot ha-pesach kol ha-layla. What were they studying? Hilchot ha-pesach, all night. Ad krot ha-gever, until the cock crowed. Higbihu milifnehen v'ni'aru. Now, according to this version of the Tosefta, what it means is that at that point, when the cock crowed, they lifted it up from them, which means they lifted the table. No, they used to eat on trays. They lifted the tray up from them, v'ni'aru, and shook it off. That's a, from the language of the Mishnah and Masachet Shabbat. What do you do after a meal when you have bones and other things on it? You shake it off. The muktzah problem. Right, so they then went from there to the Beit HaMidrash. Sorry, so now notice that they are also engaged all night in study, but the study here is the laws of Pesach. But what it sounds like is they're studying with some food in front of them, and when they get up, they shake the bones off. Let us see what this is. And the next, and this is the last paragraph in the Tosefta, in this parak, picks up on the Mishnah that says, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva have a dispute. It's in our Daf Yomi now. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Kiva have a dispute. If you make the bracha on the Pesach, does that exempt the bracha on the Chagiga or not? And the Tosefta says, Ezu berchata Pesach. What's the bracha you make on a Korban Pesach? Baruch, tarara, shek Hashem, zav, tzivanu, l'achol ha-Pesach. What's the bracha on a Zevach? Shek Hashem, zav, tzivanu, l'achol ha-Zevach. Right? A bracha that I'm sure nobody here, myself included, has ever made, but of course we hope to make in a few days. All right. What's going on here? What's this gathering at Rabbi Gamliel's house? What's it about? And how does it relate, if at all, to the story in Bnei Brak? That's the much more famous story, but this one is attested to in the Tosefta. This, we know, is a Tanaitic source. What's going on? So I'm going to start by asking you a question. I'm going to, you can unmute by pressing the button. There was just some ancillary noise coming in. What is the central feature of this holiday? There's little doubt, and in fact, there's no doubt that the central feature of this holiday is the Korban Pesach. You take a look at Parshat HaChodesh, which we heard last Shabbat, meaning not yesterday, but not 2 days ago, but the first Parshat HaChodesh, it's all about the Korban Pesach. On the 10th day, you bring it into the house, and you have to, be a yearling, and it has to be tamim, it has to be a male, and you keep it there till the 14th, and you shecht it ben arbaim, and then you roast it, and it must be roasted, it can't be cooked, and it can't be raw, and it has to be eaten by everybody, and it has to be eaten by a certain time of the night, either midnight or by morning, and you can't leave anything over the morning, and over the morning it has to be burned up, and when you eat it, you have to eat it with matzot and maror, and you have to eat it with your bags ready to go, all of that. It's all about Korban Pesach. The dam goes here, and the dam is going to stop the Malach HaMalit from coming. All of that. Malach HaMashkit from coming in. It's all about Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach is the central figure in this holiday. Without a question. Everything revolves around the Korban Pesach. And by the way, the Torah says we eat Korban Pesach with matzah and maror. What are the three symbols that Rabbi Gamliel says we have to explain? Pesach, matzah, and maror. What are the three questions that were originally part of the Manishtana? Dipping maror, eating matzah, and eating roasted meat, Pesach. It's all about the Korban Pesach. Okay, it is. So here's my question. What do you do when the Beit HaMikdash gets destroyed? And it's Pesach time. Ever since ever, going back to the deepest mists in time, because, of course, their sense of history was not nearly what ours is. So going back to my grandfather and his grandfather and whatever traditions I have going back, Korban Pesach. Philo talks about the Korban Pesach. The apocryphal books talk about the Korban Pesach. Hillel, the famous story with Hillel, we learned it once together. Korban Pesach. What are we going to do now that the Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed? So I'd like to suggest that there were essentially four choices left. Four choices before the Chachamim. And they may sound radical. Two of them will sound radical. And actually anything except the one that we actually do will sound radical because we don't do it. But I want you to, when you learn, you got to be able to clear everything out, what I already know, and I've got to be able to explore all sorts of possibilities. All right, go on mute. Tell me, what are some options that we would have now that it's Pesach time and there's no Beit HaMikdash.
You eat matzah and maror and you tell the story.
So in other words, ignore Korban Pesach, right? And institute some substitute, whole different kind of ceremony, right? Because telling the story did not seem to be a central part of the evening beforehand. So we're going to create a new ceremony.
You could still mimic bringing in the Korban.
Oh, okay, good. So we've got option number one, which is Marcia's, which is to sort of blow off. I'm going to go more radical than that, Marcia. You ready? I'm going to say, and by the way, this doesn't sound as crazy as it sounds at first. Think about it. It's not so crazy. No Korban Pesach? Fine. No Seder. Before you jump me or leave the meeting, listen up. No Korban Pesach, no Seder. And therefore, so what do we do? It's a holiday. You can't eat chametz. You have to eat matzah. Fine. So you have a yontif meal with matzah. Not so crazy. How many cups of wine? Two. You make kiddush and you bench. And it's not so nuts. Because after all, isn't that what we do any other time? That there's a feature that's no longer available? We might mention it, but we don't. But the essential ritual is gone, so that's it. That's possibility. That's one radical possibility. What's the opposite radical possibility?
You actually do the Korban Pesach.
There we go. You find some way to do a Korban Pesach without a Beit HaMikdash. Right?
Crazy. Well, you go back to the individual bamot.
You do that. Yeah. And your justification is the original was not done in the Beit HaMikdash. The original Pesach was done in homes. So you could do it in your home. Right? Those are two radical, diametrically opposite suggestions. One is the whole evening gets blown off as a special evening. It's Yom Tov. Great, but special evening. The other is the opposite, which is nothing changes. Okay, now let's.
Would you make a bracha?
What?
Would you make a bracha?
Okay, so you won't make a bracha.
Fine.
Right, fine. You mean lechol pesachim?
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to say maybe even you do.
Lechol pesach.
Yeah, maybe. Let's just, they're radical. Now, we're not doing that. And I'm not sponsoring a Seder that's going to do that. Don't worry. But, especially with the Shabbos. But, let's go now a little more temperate. Those are two radical suggestions. Now, Alan, you mentioned something. Alan Sternberg. Okay? What did you mention as another suggestion?
You can mimic the Korban.
Oh, good. So now, how do you mimic the Korban? This is now going to be numbers 2 and 3, right in the middle. There's two ways to do this, and this is a real critical difference. Matter of fact, I think that's everything that's going on here. How do you mimic the Korban? What does it mean to mimic?
You have to do the same guidelines, whatever the Torah prescribed.
Which means, go ahead.
You have to do it with Chabura. You have to do it with...
Do what? But do what?
Why?
No, do what? What are you going to do with Chabura?
Eat the Korban Pesach.
But there's no Korban Pesach. We're now going to a more moderate thing. I don't have a Korban Pesach. But how am I going to...
Tell the story?
But the story was not part of that.
That's, study the halachot of...
Say it again?
Study the halachot of...
Yeah, that's not mimicking the Korban Pesach.
You got to roast it.
Roast what?
Whatever meat you're going to have.
Whatever meat you're going to have, whatever food you're going to have, you're going to roast it and maybe serve it on a spit.
And have a communal...
And eat it with matzah and maror. And Abe, I'm not going to make a brach. I'm not going to call it Korban Pesach, but I'm going to imitate it, right?
Which and have means, a group of some kind.
And right, which means I'm going to say, you know what? We don't really have a Korban Pesach. Let's do as close as we can without crossing any boundaries. Right? I'm not going to call it Korban Pesach. I won't make the bracha, but I'm going to have it all laid out there. So that is a much less radical position than the one we said, but it's also kind of radical. Because it means even though the proper halachic framework for this ritual is down, I'm still going to do it, like you said, mimic. What's an even more moderate way to do this? Meaning a less radical way to do this. That's to symbolize the Korban Pesach, but not mimic it. So what do we do in the evening to symbolize the Korban Pesach?
Shank bone.
So you have the Zroa on the shoulder, on the thing. What else do we do?
Just have symbols.
Okay, we have some symbols. What else do we do besides the physical symbols? What about in our actions? What else do we do to remember, to symbolize the Korban Pesach?
Speak about it.
Okay, what else? What?
We're acting it out, acting it.
Good, but now take me to the food. Think about the foods.
We don't eat flea.
What? Oh, that's going the opposite direction. We're going to see about that.
You have the afikomen at the end.
Oh, there you go. Good. We have a piece of afikomen. And what do we say? This is actually in place of the Korban Pesach, which is the last thing, because the rule is ein maftirin achar Pesach afikomen. And instead, we have a last piece of matzah, and we say you can't eat anything after that. Right? Okay, what else? Think about a very famous day school right here in our neighborhood.
Hello.
Yeah. Do you have a well sandwich?
Yeah, what's the sandwich? What is that? What's the sandwich?
It's a Zecher LeMikdash.
Why? Because what did Hillel take?
Pesach
Matzamara. Right? So in other words, we do several things at the table to mimic, to symbolize. Okay, good. Now I want to ask you a very different question, but I'm going to bring them together. What were we celebrating on Pesach night every year until the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? In the year zero, when Hillel was sitting down at a Seder in Yerushalayim, what was he celebrating? What was Philo celebrating? What was the author of Jubilees celebrating? What are all these people celebrating when the Beit HaMikdash stood and they were in Yerushalayim eating Korban Pesach? What were they celebrating? What? What were they celebrating specifically, uniquely that night? What were they celebrating?
Exodus from Egypt.
Yeah, it's Exodus from Egypt. No? That's it. Exactly. A one-time event that took place. At that point, it was 1,000 years early, 1,200 years early, whatever it was. That happened. That was a foundational story of our nation. It's essential to who we are. That was what they're celebrating. It is entirely a celebration of the past. Okay. What do you do with that after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash? Because considering that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, so that we should be a sovereign people in our own land, that we should be able to dictate the norms of our own life according to the Torah, that we should have a Beit HaMikdash, which is the center not only for us, but for all of humanity. And now none of that exists anymore.
We're celebrating that we're still here.
Okay, so that's the Purim model, which is we're celebrating survival. And not so bad. Okay, anything else? Do we want to imagine ourselves as if we are at the end of the road, successfully redeemed? Or do we want to imagine ourselves as if we are on that road again? Sorry, Willie Nelson fans.
Celebrating freedom.
So it's all about the past. Okay, so let's take a look, because I'm going to show you that our Seder is made up, our Haggadah is made up of two themes which are not consistent. They're not harmonious.
But maybe you're referring back to that latter statement of Kol Yimecheyecha, of Be'at HaMashiach. You're also looking forward.
Good. Now you know why I highlighted it. Very good. Okay. So I want to show you a couple things that don't come up in the usual Pesach discussions, but should. Okay. The first thing is in source four here. Source four is a Mishnah in Masachet Eduyot. Masachet Eduyot, quick plug for Masachet Eduyot, literally testimonies, has nothing to do with testifying in court. It is an earlier version of Steven Spielberg's Shoah project. You know the Shoah project, right? Where he got survivors in and videotaped them and had their testimony. He locked away so nobody can ever make the claim it didn't happen. Well, he wasn't the first guy to come up with that idea. In Yavne, right after the destruction, they gathered people who were eyewitnesses to the rituals in the Beit HaMikdash and in Yerushalayim around the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the older generation, and they had them re-testify to what they remembered and that became part of Torah Shebaal Peh, became memorized part of Torah Shebaal Peh. And all sorts of records of this. And Masechet Idot goes on further down, so it includes Rabban Gamliel, testimony that Rabban Gamliel said or that they had in his name, as you see in source 4. Amar Rabban Gamliel. And now they record several things from Gamliel where he sided with Beit Shammai in a stringent position over Beit Hillel. And then the next Mishnah says, Afu Amar Shloshah Dvarim Mahakel. He also, by the way, had positions where he was the lenient voice. And they give three places in Halacha where he had the lenient voice. And the third one is this, Osin Gdim Mikulas V'Lelei Psachim. You make, and it's unclear from the language whether it means you may or you must. We're going to read it as you must. You must make a Gdim Mikulas on Pesach night. What is a Gdim Mikulas? We'll talk about it in a minute. The Chachamim Osrin, the Chachamim banned it. So whatever this Gdim Mikulas is for Pesach night is definitely a contentious issue. He said, do it. They said, you're not allowed to. Let's hear the backstory. So the Tosefta and Masachat Beitza, you see it here, tells us, Ezehu Gdim Mikulas. What is a Gdim Mikulas? A Gdim, by the way, is a kid, a young goat. And it's one of the two kinds of animals you may use for Korban Pesach, a goat or a lamb. Ezehu Gdim Mikulas. What does a Gdim Mikulas look like? Kulot Sali. The first thing is, it's entirely roasted. Rosho Kra'av V'Kirbo, the entire animal, the head, the feet, the kishkas, everything there on a spit, roasted. Exactly like Korban Pesach. Bishami menu koshu, shalak menu koshu. If you cooked any part of it or boiled any part of it, ein zeh gdim mikulas. No longer gdim mikulas. Now, we're not talking about halacha here. We're talking definitions. In other words, that's not called a gdim mikulas anymore. Whatever gdim mikulas is fit for, if it's cooked a little bit, not fit. Anything where gdim mikulas is banned, if it's cooked a little bit, it's not banned because it's not called gdim mikulas. Now, watch the law. Osin gdim mikulas b'yom tov rishon shachad. You're allowed to make gdim mikulas for the first night of Sukkot. You want to have a goat that is roasted and the entire body's on the spit and brought out to your table for first night of Sukkot. Well, you better have a big crowd at your house. But that's totally mutar. V'yom tov achron shapesach. You want it for Shvi shapesach? That's also fine. By the way, I'll add parenthetically, you want it for first day of Pesach lunch, that's okay too. Egel Mikulas. What's an egel? Egel?
A calf.
Egel is not an animal that can be used for Korban Pesach. Egel Mikulas B'yom Tov Rishon Shel Pesach. You could have a calf that's Mikulas on the first night of Pesach at the Seder. So what is it you're not allowed to do? Avalo Gdim Mikulas. You're not allowed to have a roasted kid at your table in this manner on first night of at the Seder. Why not? So we're going to hear a story. Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi tells the story. So this is now end of the second century. Todos Ish Romi. There was a Theodore who was a Jewish leader, a wealthy Jewish leader in Rome. Evidently, he helped support the idea that all the Jews in Rome should take lambs for the Pesach night dinner, and they would prepare them as mikulas. So in other words, you'd be sitting at a Seder in Rome after the destruction, and they would bring out a spit with the lamb, with the whole thing there, roasted, fully roasted, just like Korban Pesach. Amrulo, what did the rabbis say to Todos? Afu karov lachil korashim b'chutz. Actually, they said Rabbi Yossi. What Todos did was not good. You know why? Because it's like eating korbanot outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Why? Watch. Mimnesha korino tan pisachin. What did the people call the animal they were eating? They called it Pesach. You know, they didn't call it a lamb for Pesach. They called it a Pesach, a Paschal lamb. And therefore, the people thought they were eating korbanot. Yibane Beit HaMikdash, they'll say, I could stay in Rome. Or they're going to think that it's okay to eat korbanot outside of the precincts of Yerushalayim, so they banned it. So we see that there is a contentious issue going on in the second century about whether or not, and going back to our topic, we should symbolize or mimic the Korban Pesach. Rabbi Gamliel's position was mimic. And the rabbi said, you can't mimic. Can't do it. Symbolize, fine. Not mimic. This is a essential, it's kind of a dispute. So let's see what happens. I would like to propose the following suggestion. Rabban Gamliel, and when I say Rabban Gamliel, I don't just mean the man. I mean the man and the approach that he brought to the table and the way that he looked at what we're supposed to be celebrating, his essentialist position. But the reason I say that is because even after Magamliel, this continues, this kind of thinking continues. His essential position is Pesach is a foundational experience in Jewish history. It is an essential and vital experience in the Jewish year, in Jewish life. We have to keep celebrating Pesach like we did. And therefore, we have to imagine as if we've gotten to perfection. Everything's great. We're thanking God only for the past because we don't have to worry about the future. There's no future to be worried about here. Everything's great. And therefore, as much as possible, obviously, we're not going to say the bracha, l'chol psachim, but we're going to have a gedima kulas. The Rabbi Gamliel said, have to have a gedima kulas. So take a look one time before we go ahead. What was Rabbi Gamliel doing at the table with his zakenim in Lod? They were discussing Hilchot HaPesach and what was in front of them. Our mimicked Korban Pesach. And what did they do at the end of the evening? They got up and shook off the bones. That's the seder that Magamliel had. Now, well, Magamliel is the author of a very famous statement that's in the Haggadah. It's from the Mishnah. What does he say? We're going to get to it in the next few minutes. But do you remember? What does Magamliel say you have to do?
Explain Pesach, Maror, Matzah.
Right.
Pesach, right.
In other words, he's pointing and he's saying, Pesach, Matzah, Maror. That's what you got to explain. For him, that's the Haggadah. Okay, let's go. Here we go. I want you to follow me. I'm going to go through the most of the Haggadah very quickly. Don't do this next Saturday. Don't do this on Saturday night. Very quickly. The story starts with Avadim Hayinu. Now, this is not a political statement at all. It doesn't reflect anything about who I voted for or anything else. But I used red and blue because every time I use green, people think it's Christmas. So I use red and blue. Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim. Ve'yotzienu Adonai Eloheinu Misham B'yad Chazaka B'Zrua Netuya. That is a statement about the past. That is a Rabban Gamliel statement. Had God not taken us out, then we would still be there. I am saying to an audience that is hiding out in an attic because if the Romans come, we're in trouble. You understand, I'm speaking to an audience to whom Mitzrayim is very real right now. And had God not taken us out, we'd still be there. And therefore, no matter how wise we are, what are we obligated to do? Tell the story. Sure, what you call the Agadita. Tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. You know why we have to tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Listen carefully to this line. You know why we have to tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Because we're back in Mitzrayim. The Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed and we're back in Mitzrayim. We have to tell the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim because we're going to be reliving that story in our lives, God willing. That's what the sages in the aftermath of the destruction and especially in the aftermath of Bar Kokhba and the Hadrianic persecutions are saying. We are in Mitzrayim again. And I'll show it to you right now. So therefore, their focus is not Hilchot HaPesach, as if the Korban Pesach is there. Their focus is on Sipur Yitzhak Mitzrayim, which is, by the way, again, a phrase that does not show up in any Mishnah Tosefta. The Saper Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It's later than that. Okay. One little footnote to interject. You remember how the first three questions that were asked in the original Manishtana were dipping, matzah, and the meat? Right? Those same questions show up in Haggadot of Eretz Yisrael from the 5th and 6th century. Why were they asking the question, how come we only eat roasted meat tonight? Because you know what they had still in Eretz Yisrael for hundreds of years? Roasted lamb or roasted goat at the table. Okay, keep that in mind. Now, here we hear a story, Maaseh, Rabbi Eliezer, etc., and they highlight Rabbi Akiva, and they put this in Rabbi Akiva's hometown. I highlighted Rabbi Akiva. They put this in Rabbi Akiva's hometown, which is their way of highlighting Rabbi Akiva. By the way, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel are two very opposite kind of people. Rabbi Gamliel comes from a heritage from a lineage, from leadership, from wealth, from power. Rabbi Akiva, every one of those things is the opposite. Okay, and what were they doing in Rabbi Akiva's house all night? They weren't learning Hilchot HaPesach. They were telling the story. Until the students came and told them, it's time for morning Shema. In Midrashic literature, exile is the night. And when the morning comes, and you could say Shema, which is, by the way, the minute you can recognize another person from a bit of a distance, that's redemption. It was all redemption talk. And so what happens? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Shivim Shana. By the way, what's Shivim Shana? Why does he mention Shivim Shana? Where does Shivim Shana show up in Tanakh? Where does 70 years show up in Tanakh?
Between the first place, maybe the second.
Yeah, and who said that? Yirmiyahu said, in 70 years, you'll be redeemed. So there's a little hint here. And by the way, Chevra are here in Bnei Brak. How long has it been since the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? 20 years? Okay, hang on. 50 more years, we'll be there. By the way, it's no coincidence. Remember, Moshe Sokolow told me this many, many years ago. It's no coincidence that the Bar Kokhba rebellion started almost 70 years after the destruction. They really anticipated 70 years and then we're done. Mm-hmm. That's why Beitar was such a crushing blow. That the end of the rebellion was such a crushing blow. And so now, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, I think we should mention Yetziat Mitzrayim every night through this night of exile because we're living in exile. This is the voice of Rabbi Akiva speaking. It's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but it's that mindset. And what do they quote here in the quote in the Mishnah? They didn't stop with the quote. They quoted Chachamim. And what does it Chachamim mention? Sure, when you said it before.
They're looking forward to the Mashiach.
That's why this line is here. It's here because it's all about anticipating the future. Okay, so then we go through and we tell the story. Now, why? I want you to see this line. After we start the gnut of we used to be Ovdei Avodah Zarah, that works for everybody. We say thank God for keeping his promise. And now we have two versions of this line. Shalkodesh Baruch Hu Chishev Et HaKeitz. How many of you have Chishev Et HaKeitz in your Haggadah? How many of you say Kodesh Baruch Hu Chishev Et HaKeitz? That's what most of you say. The Rambam, Shibola, like it, many others have a Nusach that says, and many of them in the Gnizah Haggadot say this, Michashev Et HaKeitz. Now, what's the difference between these two? It's radical. It's a one-letter difference. It's a radical change. Chishev Et HaKeitz means God calculated the end to fulfill Brit Ben Avatarim, which means Brit Ben Avatarim was a one-shot deal. Your kids are going to be strangers in a foreign land. They'll be oppressed. I'm going to bring them out. Lots of wealth, etc. One time, and that's Mitzrayim. Boom. Chishev Et HaKeitz. God calculated it, brought it out. We're done. The problem is the next paragraph tells me that that's not true. The next paragraph says to me that in every generation this happens. And this brit is fulfilled in every generation. This is a Rabbi Akiva line. I put it in blue. Rabbi Akiva says, it's not just that we got out of Mitzrayim. Now we're in this tzara. Let's hope God gets us out. We're going through it again. And therefore, I propose that the read Mechashev is a Rabbi Akiva reading. I'm not saying Rabbi Akiva said this. This whole paragraph's later than that. But Mechashev means God calculates in the present tense the end. God's always calculating. He's always finding a way to redeem his people. Europe goes up in flames, and in the meantime, Eretz Yisrael is opening up. He's always finding ways to redeem his people because the breed with Avraham is an ongoing breed. Your kids will get exiled again. They'll be oppressed again. I'll come in and I'll judge the oppressor and I'll bring them out. And sometimes with great wealth, and sometimes 400 years, and sometimes not with great wealth, and sometimes it'll be less than 400 years. Okay, but the basic model is there. And so Chishev is a Rabbi Gamliel word. Happened once, we're celebrating the past event. It's Yat Mitzrayim. Machashev is the Rabbi Akiva word. He keeps calculating, keeps going on. Vishamda, all Rabbi Akiva. And then what happens here? We have, if you will, the Haggadah of Rabbi Akiva. The Haggadah of Rabbi Akiva is Arami Oved Avi. Because it establishes a pattern of Jewish history, which is exile, oppression, prayer, and redemption. And by the way, notice what happens here. Who's the first character to be invoked in this part of the Haggadah?
Lavan.
How did Lavan get in here? What's Lavan doing here, Bob? Is Lavan so terrible? Watch what we do. Ma'bikesh Lavan ha'arami lasot liYaakov avinu. Look what Lavan wanted to do to Yaakov. Who is Lavan? Lavan ha'arami. So many have suggested, and I think they're right, that harami is really a code word for lavan haromai. This is what we're living through right now.
A secret code for Rome, Edom?
Not, yeah, good. Yeah, I have that at the bottom of the page, right? There's all sorts of different ways that Chazal, including specifically Rabbi Akiva and his students, identified Rome and the current exile as being alluded to or repetitions of earlier pieces. The whole connection of Esav, Edom, Rome, Vatican is from the school of Rabbi Akiva. Right? That's why Rabbi Akiva was the one who, when he saw Bar Kokhba, called him Bar Kokhba because Darach Kochav Mi Yaakov is going to attack Edom. And of course, Edom is no longer around, but Rome is. Rabbi Akiva is probably the first one to identify Edom as Rome and make that whole connection with Esav. If anybody's interested, Gerson Cohen wrote the article on this, on Esav and how he becomes it. Let me know, I'll send you a copy. And so this entire Midrash, I'd like to contend, is part of the Rabbi Akiva school. And that is, we darshan, we take a look at these Fukim. And by the way, so many of the things that we point out, and I'll just give one example and take this to the Seder. Go with it and let me know how it goes. So many of the things we point out along here are things that are much truer about life under Roman oppression than around about Egypt. I'll give you one quick example. In the Pasuk, Vahisha, and the phrase, Vahisham Legoy, this little family went down and became a nation. What's the famous drasha in the Haggadah? Melamed Shayu Yisrael Mitzuyanim Sham. It teaches that Israel became distinct as a nation. So the Midrash, here in the Psikta says, what was Mitzuyanim mean? They had different dress, they had different clothes, they had different language, different than, it says, the Mitzrayim, you know what I mean? Different than the Romans. Midrash is much more often a statement about the time of the Midrash than the time of the text it's a Midrash on. And so the Midrash here is much more about life under Rome than it is necessarily about life in Egypt. And what's happening here is that in the Rabbi Akiva school, in this approach, this story is being darshaned in a way that makes the events of then being really about the events now. And we're anticipating another Yetziat Mitzrayim. All right, and we go through and we all through with the Makot, etc. And there's a lot to say about all the Makot and how they connect. So what happens next? We then switch and we go to this, Kama Malot Tovot. And this whole thing, which is a whole parsha by itself, of Dayenu, is all from the school of Rabbi Gamliel. We are now in the Beit HaMikdash, everything's fine. Boom. And then Rabbi Gamliel says what he says. Now I put three words here that I made up. I'm not claiming they're any Ktav Yad or anything else, and I put them in very, very faint print because I don't want anyone to accuse me of trying to tinker with the text. But look at it. Gamliel Omer, Kol Shemar Omer Shad Vamelu Pesach Lo Yitzei Dechovato. We're familiar with this. Pesach Matzamara, right? Pesach. Now, what do we say at the Seder? Pesach. How do we say it? The Pesach that our ancestors ate when the Beit HaMikdash was there. By the way, what do we say after matzah? Matzah zu. And you pick up the matzah, right? Maror zem. We pick up the maror. I'm going to contend that Rabbi Gamliel in a Seder, maybe, I'm throwing out a Pesach, just a maybe, is that he said Pesach zeh sha'anu ochlim. They were eating this roasted lamb to commemorate the Gedima Kulas, which you know he ate, and not any of this line. Al Shuma, and for him, Pesach Matzamar, all three of them are right in front of him. That's Rabbi Gamliel. Parenthetically, in the Mishnah, he explains Maror before Matzah. But in the Haggadah, we should Pesach Matzamar, it fits that order. Okay. And then what happens? Watch this. Watch how both pieces come together at the end. B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo k'yuli atzam Mitzrayim. Famous line. It's in some of the versions of the Mishnah. In every generation, a person, but we say this in our Gada, a person has to imagine himself as if he got out of Mitzrayim. In other words, you have to experience as if the past is still here. Past is still, because the future is not an issue. Shenemar, etc. And then we add a line. Whose line is this? This is Rabbi Akiva. What does he say? He didn't just redeem them. He redeemed us. Wink, wink. He's going to redeem us. And so then how does Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Gamliel continue here? Since you have to notice, I don't need this blue for this connection. Since HaKadosh Baruch Hu just took me out, therefore I'm obligated to thank, now watch this, 9 different phrases for extolling. He did all this stuff for our ancestors. And then I'd like to suggest Rabbi Akiva sneaks in the word Volano. Us too. Right? And what do we say? We're going to thank God and sing a Shira Chadasha, and we say hello. Okay, and here's the cruncher at the end. After we say two paragraphs of hello, what do we say? The Mishnah says, you finish with Gula. I want to show you the Mishnah here. The Mishnah explicitly states that Rabbi Tarfon said, Asher ge'alanu v'ga'alata avotenu mimitzrayim v'ge'anu alayla hazeh. That's it. What did Rabbi Akiva add? And this, by the way, is the proof in the pudding. What did Rabbi Akiva add to the bracha, which is what we say? So I'll show it to you in the text. Baruch Hashem v'kein Baruch Olam, and this is the Rabbi Gamliel version. Asher ge'alan, again, it's Rabbi Tarfon, but it's from Gamliel is the one associated with. Asher ge'alanu v'ga'alat avotenu mitzrayim. V'higiyanu. And please remember the word v'higiyanu here because we're going to come back to it when we do the Shachianu here. V'higiyanu halayla zeh lechol bo. And I'm going to then he said Pesach Matzomor. And what did Rabbi Akiva add? And this is, the Mishnah says this is Rabbi Akiva's addition. And we do it. Kein Hashem Eloheinu v'Elohei avotenu. Similarly, God and God of our fathers, our God and God of our fathers, Yagi'enu l'moadim v'dargim l'achirim v'abim katenu shalom, will bring us to future festivals and appointed times that will come to us in peace. Smechim b'vinyani recha, rejoicing with the rebuilding of your city. V'sasim b'avoratecha, happy with worship for you. V'rochal sham in hazvachim v'apsachim. There we will eat from the chagiga and the Pesach. And now, v'nodelecha shir chadash, not the shira chadasha of Rabbi Gamliel, the shir chadash of Rabbi Akiva. Al gulatenu v'alpdut nafshenu, v'tashem gal Yisrael. This entire nusach is Rabbi Akiva, the Mishnah says so. So I'll tell you where the dramatic change happens here. Rabbi Akiva's position, which ultimately really won the day, but not exclusively, was that in a post-Churban world, we have to turn Pesach inside out, and Pesach Leil HaSeder has to be about telling the story and about impressing the eternal and cyclical nature of the story. The Isha Amda is a vital cog in that. This thing happens every generation. You have to teach your kids what Jewish history is like and to recognize patterns. I know Rabbi Muskin at his house, for instance, when he does a Seder, he tells tons of Holocaust stories and associates them with the Midrashim. Because that's what it's really all about. That's Rabbi Akiva's Seder. Rabbi Akiva's Seder is, thank you, Hashem, for taking us out. Do it again. We're here to celebrate, but we don't have the Korban Pesach. Bring us back to eat the Korban Pesach. What's Rabbi Gamliel's position? Nothing's changed. Now, Rabbi Gamliel stays in the Seder. We don't ignore Pesach Matzamor. We don't ignore the foodstuffs. So the beginning of the evening has the story of the five sages in Bnei Brak telling the story all night. And the end, almost, of Magid, as Rabbi Gamliel saying, you have to, so both of them are there. And there's a tension between living out as if we've arrived. History was concluded with the building of the Beit HaMikdash by Shlomo, and it never went away from that. Two, reality is that we're part of an ongoing Jewish story, and the cyclical nature of that story brings us now to a point where we're anticipating a rebuilding. And so both of those poles are in our Seder. So I'd like to suggest that what we've seen over the past hour is two Haggadot, Haggadah of Rabbi Akiva and Haggadah of Rabbi Gamliel. And again, I'm not attributing authorship of every red finger of Gamaliel and every blue finger of Rabbi Akiva, but there's an approach that is that we can anchor with those names that gives this each one of these approaches an expression in the Haggadah, and both of them ended up making it part of our eternal and perennial Haggadah. So I hope that adds new dimensions to your teaching and learning and discussing on Motzei Shabbat, and for all of us still in Chutz La'aretz on Sunday night if we don't get out. Mirtz Hashem, next year we'll all sit around with one Seder in Yerushalayim and we'll be able to tell the story together. Anyways, everybody. And we will meet on the Monday after Yom.
Okay.